The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 604, recorded on March 8th, 2021.
Welcome to the 604th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 437th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Yeah, last week's episode sucked. It wasn't very interesting, so I'm just tossing it and trying again. Although it was highly entertaining because we had a guest podcaster who claimed to be TJ Denzer, but sounded nothing like him.
Oh, boy. I tried out a new microphone last week, and I found out that if my connection gets interrupted, it pitch shifts my voice down.
Why would it do that? I don't get it.
That is a weird quirk, isn't it?
Yeah, very weird.
Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing Mario Maker and Bravely Default 2. I just purchased the Bravely Default game. From the premise, it sounds a bit like Final Fantasy 1 and 3 combined. You have these Warriors of Light, and they have these...
Wait, did you ever play the first one?
No, I haven't. But
okay.
I heard that they're separate games.
Yeah, but I'm just saying it. Everybody and their mother loved Bravely Default. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's Pokemon. Well, the Beastmaster job anyway.
Okay. Yeah. So they have various jobs, so reminds me of Final Fantasy III, the job system that was introduced there. So, you know, you can customize your party's abilities, which is fun. And then, of course, you have this story, very strong story, it seems. They're just going to see how it goes.
Have you hired Gloria? Have you hired Gloria?
No, I haven't.
Like, okay, she's a Beastmaster? Well, she's actually a white mage, but if you make her a Beastmaster, they actually make your party really, really powerful, because when it levels up, you just have monsters to fight on your side like nothing else.
That does sound good.
Yeah.
Very, you know, useful. So.
Are you still playing Valheim?
Yes. Of course. I just got Stonecutter, so I'm starting to build a stone castle, and I've seen some builds that people have done, and it's truly inspiring. People are making Skyrim and the Stormwind Harbor from World of Warcraft, and just all sorts of things.
You said that Odin visited
very
you.
Very creative with this game.
You said that Odin visited
Odin
you
while I was wandering at night. Yeah. Odin, this is me. He gave his blessings. I don't know. But it's a challenging game. There's a lot of opportunity to build up. Even if something comes wrecks to your stuff, you can rebuild pretty easily. I think, you know, all the items drop from whatever is broken, so you can just rebuild something. So it's not it's not too punishing.
Have you still been playing Phasmophobia, though?
That I haven't been playing. I just watched that when someone plays a Let's Play.
We'll be discussing Phasmophobia later in the podcast.
Okay.
So, TJ, what have you been
playing? I haven't played that one. I just watched Let's Play.
Huh. What have you been playing, TJ?
I played a lot of Hitman this last weekend.
Hitman 3 or...?
The first one. I've gotten all three games now, and I'm working my way from the beginning to Hitman 3.
Okay.
So, man, I love
good,
those.
Good on you, Jay.
Yeah, I wanted to play the new Hitman trilogy for a long time, and it just, like, I always had other stuff to do. So once Hitman 3 came out and I learned that they were going to sort of, like, optimize all three games and turn it into, like, one package if you have all of them, I decided to pull the trigger.
Here's the thing. When all the games basically just link into each other, so if you get, like, 1 and 2 or 1, 2, and 3, you're basically playing one big game.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference between any of the 1, 2, or 3. They're just, like, contiguous missions.
Yep, and the gear that you collect from, like, unlocking challenges in the game can be moved. Like, if you collect a certain set of shotguns and gadgets and sniper rifles in Hitman 1, then you can bring those games into your mission. You can bring that gear into your missions in Hitman 2 missions. It's really cool how they've set that up. They also set it up so, like, the whole package, like Hitman 1, 2, and 3, is actually in a tidy package under 100 gigabytes, so I appreciate that kind of optimization.
Well, it's not only that, but it's all also the same game. It's basically they're all basically the same game, and 1, 2, and 3 are just missions.
Right. Basically, you import all of the first and second game's missions into Hitman 3.
Yeah, because remember, Hitman 1 was originally released as 5 mission packs, I believe, or 5, it was, I know it was episodic, I think it was 5 missions, or packs,
6
right, mm-hmm. And that's basically what they did, you know, they just continued doing it, except they just released them all in 2 and 3 as well, instead of
and
making,
like,
you wait for a month.
I've seen enough, like, one of my colleagues is a fanatic about Hitman 3, and like, I've seen how breathtaking those environments are, but even Hitman 1 is incredible in its environments. I love the levels in that game. Like, every single one of them from Paris, the very first mission of the game, starts you out at this grand sort of mansion party in which you have to kill two people hosting both a fashion show and a spy auction in the same mansion.
Mm.
And it's just like, it's incredible how in-depth and lavish these levels are. The one that I was working on this last weekend is, like, you go to a hotel in Bangkok, Thailand, where this guy who is, like, a indie musician who is, like, Jared Leto without actually being called Jared Leto. He looks exactly like the guy, and it's, like, creepy how close they got to, like, making him look like that person without just, like, straight up calling him that. And you have to kill him.
The game does seem to have some goofy or silly moments.
Well, the silliness comes from the ways you can kill these people, and
yeah,
you can just. Here's the thing. There's the way the game suggests you do it, and I suggest screw it. Once you learn the level, the game rewards you for finding the weirdest, most out-of-the-way, most Byzantine way of killing somebody. And everything you do, it says, oh, you did it this way with this and this and this. You get bonus points for that. Mm-hmm. And then the best part is you can send that to your friends and say, hey, try and do this.
Yeah. Like, the ultimate mark of mastery in that game is getting the fastest kill done in your suit without being seen or heard, and then getting out as soon as possible. It's called Silent Assassin, and it's like the amount of trouble that people go through to get that challenge done is incredible. It's like seeing a master at work. And there are people that, like, will do like ridiculous challenges where they, like, kill every single person in the entire level and then stuff them all inside of one refrigerator.
Come on, TJ, you worked for Twin Galaxies, you know all about speedrunners.
Yeah, it's funny to see what people do, but it's also just like there's a lot in that game that you can that there's not only a lot to do, but there's a lot to explore in each of those levels. They're very dense. I think one of my favorite Easter eggs is that there's a level in Sapienza, Italy, and there's a sewer that goes underneath the city that you can head into, and if you go down there, you can find not only a guy dressed as Mario, and you can find a guy dressed as Luigi.
That's cool.
Yeah. Hitman is not afraid to be goofy.
Mm-hmm.
So, as for me, Game Pass is really good to me because NBA 2K21 was launched on Game Pass. I played the My Career mode, and virtual currency kept on choking off whatever fun I wanted to have, and the breaking point was that I did earn the right to be drafted, but I didn't see a draft. They just said, okay, what team do you want to play for? Here's your salary. And I just noped it out of her, uninstall. Then I installed Madden NFL 21, and it sucks on toast, uninstall. So thank you, Game Pass, for allowing me to sample games that I would have dreaded having to spend money for had they not been good. And they weren't good. And I knew they weren't going to be good. Because I just hate it when it does... You know, I hate sports games of recent yore. I mean, basketball sucks, and I don't care... And, oh, yeah, the other thing that made me nope out at NBA 2K21 was the franchise mode sucks. They're doing this entire Byzantine way of doing action points, but I can't tell when action points are spent, because I think, oh, you only have 3 action points. I spent them. Oh, wait, you had another one. What? It's just depressing.
Yeah, I hear Madden's story mode is just as bad.
I just...
One of my buddies was telling me, like, you can be a quarterback and, like, throw 130 points worth of touchdowns, and at the end of the game, the coach would be like, you suck, take a bench.
I want someone to make a game that's single-player only, please. I don't... And the other thing about NBA 2K21 and also Madden as well is I don't care about the online modes. I don't care about Madden Ultimate Team. I don't care about NBA 2K21, the playground. I don't care, and I don't want to care. You know? Someone make a basketball game that's just for me and no one else. And I don't mean me, you know, as the only purchaser. I just want to play a single-player game, damn it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see about MLB The Show. And that's definitely not going to be on Game Pass, so if I want to play it, I'm probably going to have to buy it. And if I do buy it, I'm probably going to have to get the $70 version, which, you know, you get the Xbox One version, and it automatically upgrades to the Xbox Series X version later.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Well, the good thing about The Show is that, like, I don't really know if The Show has, like...
It has Diamond Dynasty, and one of the things that gets me nervous is that Road to The Show is tied in with Diamond Dynasty, which is how it is in VC NBA 2K21.
So, wait, is Diamond Dynasty like The Show's version of Madden Ultimate Teams?
Yes.
Oh, no. I didn't know it had that. I thought that it avoided doing that.
But, we'll see.
That's the issue with Madden and 2K games, right? It's like they pour so much more effort into that nickel and dime, like, here, buy some card packs with your parents' credit card money, kids. You'll get the players that you want, and it'll only cost you like $250 after you already bought the game.
But you see, but that's not the problem I have, because I'll never spend money on that. The problem I have is when a game gimps your single-player character like it does in NBA 2K21 and says, well, you know, if you want to make your character a little better, you can always spend a little bit of money, more money. And I'm like, nope.
Right.
And the problem is, I didn't even get what I wanted, you know. I mean, here's the thing. Road to The Show, from what I understand, is not hampered like that. As a matter of fact, it'd be exceedingly difficult to hamper it with baseball. Easier to do with basketball, easier to do with football, not as easy to do with baseball. And one of the things I like, one of the complaints by people, which I absolutely love, is that if your character is mediocre, it'll take them forever to get to the majors. And I'm like, yes! I want that struggle. Here's the thing. In NBA 2K21, I always wanted a thing in which, you know what the thing that really, really irritates me? Is that I could have a 68 or 67 rating player, and after a year I'll be in the starting lineup. Why? Why would the team do that? Why would you... Why? Imagine if you were a team owner and you said, you know, we have James Harden, but instead we're going to use Joe Bubba Fuck because he's something special about him.
I don't like that. You know, if I'm that little character, I want to struggle in the G League. I want to earn my way onto the team. You know, be in the G League, be a 12th man off the bench. You know, still have to struggle to get my character up. You know, that's role playing. Damn it, that's the entire point. I don't want to be in the starting lineup if I'm barely able to compete. It just feels weird to me. And if I have to struggle to make it to the majors, fine. I'm good with that. That's my story.
Yeah, like, sports games are in a starry state, and I don't think that they're going back towards anything good anytime soon. I hope that the show is good, but,
well,
yeah.
I mean, last year's Road to the Show was praised, so we'll see. And here's the thing. So long as you know if a game is being tampered with in the single player, if they don't allow you to use sliders, I believe you'll still be able to use sliders on Road to the Show. And that's fine. You know, if I can use sliders, and I go to operationsports.com, which is the ultimate sports video game site, and they always have stuff like, here's the sliders to use to make it as realistic as possible for this game and that sort of thing. So, yeah. Here's the thing. Out of the park baseball is great, but sometimes I want to have an action baseball game. And the new Out of the Park baseball is coming out soon.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't look half bad, but yeah, it doesn't. It also doesn't look like anything spectacular.
Here's the funny thing: is that Out of the Park baseball also does the Madden Ultimate Team style game too. But on the other hand, guess what? The single-player mode is completely and utterly unaffected.
Hmm.
It's like they just have it as an extra mode because it's text baseball sim, you know? What are they going to do? You can create your own baseball cards in-game. Oh, speaking of MLB The Show, they finally unveiled what everybody knew was coming, and that is Stadium Creator. And it looks very robust. You can change the heights of the walls. You can change the backgrounds. Someone put one in which it was after the outfield wall is nothing but cornfields. So sort of like Field of Dreams.
Yep.
So it's very robust, and I have every reason to believe that this is not going to be screwed up by the Diamond Dynasty part of the game. And, you know, they also have a single-player version of the Diamond Dynasty thing, too. I don't know why you'd play it, but, you know. You know, here's the thing. Back, I think it was Madden.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Like, I guess I just hope that the rest of the game is as robust as it has always been. And I don't have any reason to believe it wouldn't be, but, like, the reliance on those stupid Ultimate Teams modes these days is just...
Back in Madden 2011 or something like that, I'm not sure which, maybe 2011, 2013, I'm not sure. They actually had Madden Ultimate Team, but it was strictly single player.
Yeah.
And it was just a cool game in which you earned cards and built a superstar team. I think they were aping off All-Pro Football 2K7. Was it 2K7? Yeah, 2K7.
Yeah. But like these days, that's the biggest problem is that they pour. That's where they make the money, so that's where they pour all of their priority, and everything else suffers for it.
Yeah, I heard it was like it was $1.6 billion in revenue. I don't know if it was 2K. It was for 2K, but their version of Ultimate Team for NBA 2K also made $1.6 billion. And I just wish these kiddies would just grow up and realize you're not getting a better game. Anyways, like I said, I have no reason to doubt MLB The Show is going to be anything like that. If it is, you'll hear about it from me quite loudly. On a side note, I've also started playing Spiritfarer again just to round out the achievements. I actually got one for getting the fastest ship. Now I have to get one for the biggest ship, and then I'll be done. For those who missed out, play Spiritfarer. It is a great game. It is different from other games like Gree or Sea of Solitude in that there's a game there. There's an actual game there. And the story is a lot more through the environment, like Limbo, you know. Because Spiritfarer does tell you a very sad story. And there's a lot of tear-jerking moments, but they're all earned. They're not like Gree or Sea of Solitude, which say, you're supposed to cry now, so cry.
Uh-huh.
No, Spiritfarer does it without having to do anything extra. It's just through the course of it. Have either of you played Spiritfarer?
I haven't had a chance to play through it yet.
Okay. Scott? Scott's sleeping, so we'll let him sleep. If only because the animation is excellent. Have you seen the animation for Spiritfarer?
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. That has kind of always been one of the draws of the game to me, is that art style looks really great.
And you get to hug people, including your cat.
Mm-hmm.
And your cat sings when you play the song. It's cute seeing him singing while you're playing the guitar when you're doing to make the plants grow. It's sad that it's only one song, but then again, the song is the leitmotif of the entire game. It's the theme of the game. And it's a great theme, but sometimes I wish it would have a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, when you play Spiritfarer, you will not regret it. It is just above Ori in terms of gameplay and emotional stuff.
That's cool. They're also doing more content for it this year.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
They made an announcement a little while back. There's going to be three different points at which they release content this year.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yes, a part of that is going to be new characters that you interact with and help.
Yeah. Yeah, more characters you take out to the forest and ice them in the back of the head.
Ah.
Not really. That's not exactly what happens. For those of you who don't know, Spiritfarer, you're playing a psychopomp. Who's doing Charon's job. Mm. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to spoil anything about who these characters are and their relationship to the main character. So, the time has been over a year for spoilers, but I think I'm still going to keep the spoiler tag on that game. It's just... Here's the game. You got to play it. And even though it's on Game Pass, I may end up purchasing it, even though I've completed it. Why not reward the developers?
Yeah. Are you gonna go back to it and re-explore once the new content comes out this year?
Yeah, the problem I have with the game, though, is that some of the platforming stuff is so annoying. That's the only reason why I didn't play directly from the start this time. But so if there's new DLC coming out, and once I complete the game, as in get the achievements, all the achievements, then I'll have to play it over again. It is a game that is worthy of replay. And it's a story that's fun to enjoy. So yeah, if anybody who's hesitant on Spiritfarer, go get it. Don't even think about it. It was a game of the year for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I was looking and I saw Hades won a lot of Game of the Year awards itself.
Yes. It was our indie Game of the Year at Shack News.
Yeah, the thing is that their stories are quite different, but for some reason, Hades and Spiritfarer both strike me the same way. And I think it's because they get a lot of their story through the environment. And from dialogue that doesn't exactly tell you what's going on. It just everything is implied. Anyways, that's my advice of the week. Go get Spiritfarer. You won't lose. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Microsoft's $7.5 billion acquisition of Bethesda has been given the green light, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. Both the United States Securities and Exchange Commission and the European Union Commission have given Microsoft's proposed acquisition of ZeniMax, the parent company of Bethesda Game Studios, the approval to proceed. Following this investigation, which was opened in February 2020, wow, that is a long time. That's over a year. The SEC posted a notice of effectiveness last week alongside the full sales prospectus. The latter breaks down in a complex way the way the total price of the $7.5 billion is reached, which sounds a bit like a Fallout quest line. It involves promissory notes that will mature over the next 3 decades, essentially, and splits into $6.25 billion of Microsoft's new 2052 notes and up to $1.25 trillion aggregate proposal amount. Is that a trillion? Yeah, that's a trillion. Of our new 2062 notes. In addition to the SEC's decision, the EU Commission has decided not to oppose Microsoft's acquisition either, clearing the way for the deal to be completed. The decision follows an investigation into the proposed merger, and the EU's decision references Article 6.1b, which reads that, in part, the deal does not, quote-unquote, raise serious doubts as to its compatibility with a common market, and herefore it shall not oppose it, and shall declare it compatible with the common market. What they're saying is that if Microsoft acquires Bethesda, Sony's not going to go out of business, Nintendo's not going to go out of business, people are not, they're not going to dominate the market just because they have ZeniMax. You know, they're not going to strangle the market if they have ZeniMax. Even if they decided to make all Bethesda and Arkane's games exclusive to the Xbox, it's not going to hurt the video game market. So, now all that means is now I am eagerly awaiting to see what that when Microsoft is going to announce that show that's supposed to be happening this month. And I really want to know what Starfield is.
Yeah, we all do.
Speak up there, Scott. You were...
Sorry. We all want to know what the Starfield is. You know, is it going to be a first-person space shooting game? Or is it going to be, you know, a top-down isometric adventure? Or,
yeah,
you know, space sim? Or just, I mean, it could be anything right now.
I'm saying something like Elite Dangerous, except it's focusing more on less on spaceships. That's my guess.
Okay.
So, TJ, speaking of ZeniMax, I know you're getting more and more excited over Deathloop.
Oh my god! Every single time we see something new for this game, it makes me so happy. And this last trailer, that theme song they had for it, very James Bond-like, very good. They put it on Spotify, and I've been listening to the hell out of that song ever since it dropped.
Yeah.
It's really good. I really enjoy how much they show off, like, kind of what they've learned as Arkane Studios, and then how they've applied it to what they've got here. Because, like...
By the way, the characters in Deathloop, they still look like characters that you'd expect from Arkane, right? Mm-hmm. Very much like Dishonored.
Yes, a little bit like sort of almost they're human, but there's almost like sort of a strange, stretched, grotesque element to a lot of them.
Well, here's the thing: Deathloop is basically going for that 70s vibe, so I think that's a reflection of that.
Yes, and this whole thing is basically a spy versus spy premise in which your character that is an assassin that has to kill 8 targets, but there's also another spy that's like trying to keep you from killing those 8 targets. Trying to kill you and keep you in this time loop in which you have to start all over at the beginning, but you get to keep everything all the weapons you got and all the abilities you learned. And it's just really cool to see, like, the Dishonored element of it, like, comes into play immediately, because you can do, like, blinks through space to, like, move from the ground up to, like, rooftops. You can
That sounds awfully familiar.
Yeah, you can jump down on people and assassinate them. You can toss them up into the air and then throw them out windows with like, telekinesis powers. There's like nail gun. There's like a straight up nail gun in which you just drop a pile of nails into this weapon and blast people with it.
Yeah. So it's going to remain a PlayStation exclusive for a year. And then it's going to hit everything else. Same deal with Ghostwire Tokyo, which looks interesting to me. I'm interested to see what that's all about when it comes out. Those are the two exclusive PlayStation games. Now, there was a lot of speculation of what Microsoft's going to do with this license. And one person says, well, they're going to keep it like a Minecraft sort of situation and just keep releasing for everybody because, you know, and the only benefit they'll do for the Xbox and PC version is a special DLC, which, by the way, that is the stupidest idea I've ever heard. No, Microsoft's not going to do that because that's never worked. I mean, did people buy Arkham just because you could play as the Joker in the in those mini battles? You know, no. What I think Microsoft is going to do is just simply do limited time exclusivity based on the game. So for something like The Elder Scrolls 6, 3 months exclusivity. So it remains on, you know, so PlayStation users don't really lose out. They just have to wait a bit. And for other games, like a year, you know, I think they're going to go with a timed exclusivity. And because that's what they've been doing with other games. Like, look at games like Cuphead and games like Ori. You know, they went to other platforms. It just took them a while.
Yeah. They did that with, what game did they do that with?
They did it with Ori. They did it with Cuphead.
Something else.
They did it with Zoo Tycoon, but that was for the portable.
Yeah, there's a lot of games that they've done that with.
But here's the thing. The main thing is that they just want a bit of a timed exclusivity, even a month or less, you know, for a major, major game, because everything that's going to be from ZeniMax is going to be day one on Game Pass. And if you tell someone, well, you know, you can play The Elder Scrolls 6 first on PC Game Pass, that's going to attract a lot of people. People will run to it. And here's the thing. Microsoft is not opposed to Steam. So if you just want to buy it on Steam, hey, guess what? Go right ahead. And I know a lot of people would rather play something like The Elder Scrolls on Steam because, you know, mods. And they'll have mods on Game Pass too, but people are just comfortable with doing mods on Steam, you know. But just the fact that you can play it, and if it's a part of your subscription, it's free, you know, that's going to attract a lot of people.
Yeah. All about making the Game Pass more attractive.
And they don't need to do something draconian. Like, say, PlayStation will never get The Elder Scrolls 6, ever. No, they don't need to do that.
No, not at all. They can make... Why you cut yourself off like that when you can make money on Xbox and make money on PlayStation?
I mean, just, you know, even for Elder Scrolls 6, maybe a month exclusivity. That's all you need. You know? Just that... Because here's the thing, for a lot of gamers, a month is an eternity. And your friends are playing Elder Scrolls 6 and you're not. One thing I hope for Elder Scrolls 6, now that I think about it, is I hope they have a co-op mode that's cross-platform.
Yeah, that would be good. A lot of people looking forward to that.
Holy shit, I just realized Microsoft's going to own the Elder Scrolls Online. I'm wondering what they're going to do with that.
There'll probably be DLC in there, microtransactions if there aren't already.
I mean, Microsoft's done a lot of, you just do what you do best. You know, that's why, here's the thing, Scott. Have you been disappointed at all with anything that Mojang has done for the past few years?
Not really, but I have noticed that Microsoft has microtransactions for the Windows version of Minecraft.
Yeah, but that's all cosmetics.
Yeah,
I mean, they have PlayStation exclusive content still, you know, for PlayStation characters, right?
Yeah, I think so. They have maps and skins and all sorts of different things for the, like I said, the Windows version. So I'm just saying, I was surprised if DLC stuff showed up for Elder Scrolls Online, probably cosmetic, like you said, but certainly in the realm of possibility.
Yeah. And the thing that interests me about Starfield is that it is completely Todd Howard's baby. It'll be interesting to see what he did, because the last thing that was his baby was Fallout 4, if I remember. And, oh yeah, about that Fallout 4 lawsuit, looks like it didn't affect this decision at all.
No.
No one's blocking it. Well, so it's going to go through. It'll be interesting to see what happens, because there's a way to head off. I think you're just going to see a settlement. I think the lawyers just want a bit of money. Because it hasn't achieved class action yet. So they'll get 500 G's and say, okay, go away. And then you'll have to, when next time you log into Fallout 4, you'll see an agreement saying, yeah, do not sue us. So, TJ, what have you been thinking about the acquisition since it was officially announced today?
I've agreed with you for the most part that, like, nothing will probably change as far as, like, availability of these games to other platforms. I just think that Microsoft will be able to sort of throw their weight around, and if they want exclusivity, they'll probably get it. But like I said earlier, I don't think that they would cut themselves off from making money on other platforms.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, I'm happy to see that Deathloop is still going to be rolling out the way it is, and they're also going to honor, like,
well, they have
deals that they did beforehand.
Yeah, they have to, though. I mean, but again, you know, like with that, you know, Xbox users will just have to wait a year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can see where Deathloop can get some really nifty DLC. Just by adding extra targets.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think that you could easily build upon the arrangement that you already have here by just, like, adding a new cog to the system that, like, makes you rethink how you handle the other, like, the arrangement and the timing and the order in which you mess with the other targets.
Shall we talk about the other rumor involving Microsoft? And that is Microsoft is in talks with From Software to do a game of their own. And it's supposed to be a sci-fi game. Now, just because it's a sci-fi game doesn't mean it's going to be Dark Souls in space. I mean, it probably could be, since From Software hasn't really deviated from that formula in a very long while. But, you know, I mean, PlayStation has its Bloodborne. So, Microsoft may want a piece of that action. They're really cheeky. They call it Spaceborne. Anyways, let's move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Let's see here.
He's looking up From Software and Microsoft now. By the way, speaking of loops, you know, that reminds me of a game that was announced like 2 years ago, which I'm really looking forward to seeing, and that's 12 Minutes. It's that top-down game which has 12-minute loops. Do you remember that?
It's also got a lot of good stars in it. Like, Willem Dafoe is in there. Ridley Scott is in there, I do believe. Some strangely good names on the voice list.
James McAvoy.
Uh huh.
Well, Daisy Ridley.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it because I'd love to see how that.
Yeah, I meant Daisy Ridley.
What?
Did I say Ridley Scott before?
No, it's Daisy Ridley.
Okay. But yeah, it's like it's almost bizarre to me how good the cast list for that game is.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing: a lot of the money isn't going towards graphics. I mean, they look great, but it's a top-down view of a room. So, mm-hmm. But yeah. So moving on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Star Dynasty is announced from PC Games N. Star Dynasties, an upcoming Space 4X game from publisher Iceberg Interactive and developer Pauly Games, wants to go all Game of Thrones with intergalactic policies. Or politics. It's due to launch on Steam Early Access later this month. Much like Crusader Kings, this grand strategy game will focus less on management and mechanics and more on emergent narratives and role-playing. You must lead one of a number of factions who've emerged from the chaos that stemmed from the destruction of Earth, causing an interstellar dark age as the survivors struggled to cope without humanity's home to guide them. Those that remained have banded together into feudalistic societies, which is where the game starts you off. Freed from the shackles of history, Pauly Games is free to explore role-playing a bit more in Star Dynasties. For example, you get to customize your starting character before leading them and their family through the trials the game will throw at you. The science fiction setting will also lend itself more to more imaginative character interactions, especially in the realm of intrigue and politics.
For some reason, Star Dynasties reminded me of a little bit of Dune.
Yes, it does sound a little bit like that.
Have you seen the trailer?
Like, I have not.
Oh, okay.
Let me have a look at this.
Yeah, it's... You're going to say, wait, that's Crusader Kings in space! It's not even trying to be subtle about it.
Uh-huh. Well, and also, like, I was wondering a little bit. I'm almost certain that, like, the implication is that they discovered star travel and then the Earth was destroyed.
Basically, yeah. Basically, you have your own system, and you do everything that you do in Crusader Kings, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Intrigue, marrying, that sort of stuff.
Interesting. So, yeah, it is going to be very much sort of a, like, you play as a character, try to make your way through, front-end negotiation and back-alley dealings in the depths of space.
But thankfully, since it's not tied to history, which Crusader Kings is a bit, you can build your characters from the ground up. You don't have to adopt someone else and then maybe tweak them a little bit, you know. Because mm-hmm. the only thing you can really change in Crusader Kings is whether they're, say, gluttonous or just a shithead, that sort of thing, you know. Here you can create your character from the ground up.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if it's going to be all... It kind of looks like it's just going to be all human interactions.
No. There's going to be other stuff. Like I said, this is science fiction, which will allow... Here's the thing. Crusader Kings didn't mind going into fantasy because it has actual magic in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Crusader Kings 2 can actually have you giving birth to the devil.
Yes.
So, I'm keeping an eye on this one. It's coming out in early access later this month, and there's a lot of frustrations in Crusader Kings, which I hope Star Dynasties mitigates.
Mm-hmm. Once you get to certain points in Crusader Kings, it just kind of feels like you have to let a lot of time pass before anything new and interesting happens.
Also, they're also streamlining combat in Star Dynasties, which makes sense since you're just dealing with spaceships instead of armies and supply lines and you know. And I'm really interested to see where this goes because, you know, if you want to play Dune in space, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
The spice is everything. So anyways, move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott. Or I will go. Phasmophobia's latest update means ghosts can open doors and follow your voice, and this comes to us from Eurogamer. Kinetic Games, developer of indie Smash game Phasmophobia, has unveiled a raft of changes that's coming to the Ghost Detective game, including a new accessibility feature and quality of life improvements. The new accessibility page allows players to swap out sound and mono for hard of hearing and hearing impaired players, whilst the new button to contract difficulty ensures it'll no longer be randomized. The Ghost AI has also been tweaked. They can now follow you around a corner and listen for player voices when hunting, as well as open doors, closets, and lockers during hunts too. Kinect Games recently announced it was reconsidering its development plans, which it only initially called for a short early access period, as a result of the game's huge success. Phasmophobia is still available on Steam Early Access. So yeah, remember what's the name of that game again? Resident Evil 2, in which you can just go through a door and the zombies won't follow you. Well, guess what? That no longer works here too.
Yeah, this it's been really fun to see how they keep developing Phasmophobia, because it was like it was one of those breakout darlings last year, where like suddenly everybody was paying attention to this game, and it was like up there with the likes of Fall Guys and Among Us. Mm-hmm. It had its couple months where it was like you couldn't like go through a week without hearing about it. So I'm happy to see them continuing to push this game forward. It's still in early access too.
Yeah.
So
here's the thing. This game is a lot. It's built to survive more than Fall Guys and Among Us, because it's basically Left 4 Dead. I mean, it's a variation on the concept. And when you have a co-op game in which things are varied every time you play, and it's also spooky, that I think that gives it a little bit more legs.
It also makes the riddle of like. Because the whole point of the game is to use the clues that the ghost gives you to determine what kind of ghost they are and escape without being killed by them.
Yeah.
So the more ghosts and more ghost types that you have in that game, the more difficult and complicated the riddle becomes. So I think it's pretty great what kind of foundation they have for the game. And I think it's always going to be intriguing how much each ghost and each little bit of new content makes that sort of overall gameplay a little bit more, I wouldn't say complicated so much as just like a little bit more difficult to pin down right away.
Yeah.
Cause that's part of like an issue with that game, is that the more people play it, the more they figure out its tricks, the more they're like, oh, it's that. You don't even need to worry. It's just that. Let's go ahead and put it in. Let's go. We figured it out. Good to go. Game done. And it's like, when you have this new content, it throws all of that into disarray, and people have to try harder.
By the way, that reminds me. Let's talk about co-op gameplay. And there's been some announcements for Back 4 Blood, and the main thing is that the microtransactions are going to be all cosmetic stuff. But the game looks good. I mean, what do you expect since it's virtually Left 4 Dead 3? And I'm really looking forward to it. I want to see how it plays.
Mm-hmm. Me too. It looks good. Like, it looks like something I would expect from the people that worked on Left 4 Dead. There's a deck building element in the game, and it concerns me because, like, it can actually mess with what kind of gear you have. I hope that they recently had an alpha, and I hope that they take feedback on that deck building seriously, because I don't like the idea of a game deciding what kind of starting equipment I have. If I want to play a shotgun in a zombie game, just let me play the shotgun in the zombie game.
I don't know. I mean, Halo 5 made it work. Here's the thing. Maybe there'll be two modes, you know, in which you get to decide what weapons you have, and you know, and I think it also could be, well, you know, you can use your shotgun, but the cards give you a more powerful version of the base weapons.
Mm-hmm. I would be okay with something like that. I don't want the cards to decide how I play the game so much as like give me so much as the cards give me things that I must then react against.
I just want another Left 4 Dead. It's been a while.
Yeah. It's between this and that Aliens game that's coming out.
Mm. So, I'm debating about that Stardew Valley board game. It looks really, really sweet. But, you know, and it does have a single-player mode. Have you seen the pieces for it?
The Stardew Valley board game? Yes.
Yeah. It looks good.
Yeah, it looks really good. It does look really good. I like the blend of the sort of farming and monster hunting they've got in that game. And then, of course, you've got the characters and the character relationships.
And all the pieces look like they belong to the video game, too. It's really nicely done. So, one last note about board games. There's the Monster Hunter World board game.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming to Kickstarter. It's going to be gigantic. The complete version will cost $279.
Dang.
And here's the thing, for those who don't know, when you get something on Kickstarter in the wild, buying it in the wild, if it's available in the wild, it'll cost a lot more. So I'm guessing $350 if you buy it in a store whenever it comes out. But that's the thing with all these miniature games. You know, the miniatures are what cost you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're really into Monster Hunter, and it'll be interesting to see how they put that into a board game. Because the thing about Monster Hunter is that Monster Hunter is a really slow burn.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you have to... You spend most of your time trying to find the monster or attract it. And then you have long, drawn-out battles with the monster, too. So it'll be interesting to see how they incorporate that into the game. I mean, the game port seems very simple, so we'll see.
Yeah. Like, if it's a good game, then I guess that's... I mean, you get what you pay for, right? Like, this is for enthusiasts that, like... Love them some Monster Hunter. You know what?
Here's the thing. The base game costs $70, but who's going to want to play a base game of Monster Hunter World?
The more I think about it, the more I realize having a miniature of Neri Gigante on my desk would be like, fuck. There are some awesome monsters in Monster Hunter, and to have miniatures of those monsters would be really cool.
Yeah, you should. They look good. The only thing is that, you know, you need to break out that temper paint and paint them yourselves because they're all gray. But, hey, I have Nemesis. And Nemesis is a great game, but most of the cost comes from having the aliens. Gigantic aliens.
Yes. And you have so many monsters to draw from over the course of the long Monster Hunter history. And they're adding more, because there's another game coming out at the end of this month with Monster Hunter Rise.
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to mention is that there is a Monster Hunter game coming out that's going to be on PC and Switch at the same time. It's not Rise. I'm trying to remember what the name is. It's Monster Hunter... Monster Hunter Stories 2. It's coming out on PC and Switch at the same time in July.
Yeah. They did confirm that Monster Hunter Rise would be also coming to PC next year. But Monster Hunter Stories is Monster Hunter Stories 2 Wings of Ruin is the one they confirmed today would be coming to both Nintendo Switch and PC in July.
It's interesting because the first one was on a 3DS originally.
Yeah. It's also interesting because it's one of the first games that I've ever seen for a Monster Hunter game where you actually, like, befriend the monster instead of turning it into swords and boots.
Yeah, it's basically Monster Hunter Pokemon.
Well, like, it looks more like How to Train Your Dragon and Monster Hunter got together.
Yeah. And, that's one of the jokes they had about...
You basically, like, become a dragon rider in the game.
That's one of the jokes from Zero Punctuation about Monster Hunter, in which Yahtzee Kurosho says, you research, air quotes, these monsters, and then research their children to make boots for yourselves. And you often wonder, who's the bad guy here? I'm going to give him a damn good researching.
Yeah, so it's going to be a very good year for Monster Hunter.
Hmm.
Like, everything they've got going on between stories, between Rise, between this board game, it's a good year to be a Monster Hunter fan.
Hmm. Well, here's the thing. It was sort of like, wasn't there a down period, like, in the 2010s for Monster Hunter?
Yes. I think there's a little bit of delay there. I think they had some... patches that they were working on.
Because I remember that people got excited when Monster Hunter... Was it World that was announced? The new one? The one that came out like a few years ago?
Yeah, I believe it's World.
And people got really apeshit, batshit happy that it was being released for PC. Anyways, Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Chard Moore.
And hopefully we'll have news about the Microsoft show that's supposed to come. One of the worst kept secrets right now. to show off the ZeniMax stuff and Starfield. Yeah. Hopefully there'll be an announcement this coming week.
Yeah. There's been a lot of worst kept secrets, a whole bunch of, you know, like between the Nintendo Switch rumors and all these other games being worked on.
Yeah. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.